Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wole, and Ray Jeezy. Had to do this again. All right, what's going on, fellas?
Everything is copacetic.
It's like a rewind. I can't deal today, bro. Hey, Ray, how are you doing today?
Brother, I'm excited about the topics that we're going to discuss because we just went through a period where it wasn't a whole lot to talk about. The Olympics just weren't the same this past summer.
Hey, yo, this
feels like deja vu.
I know, right?
It feels like you said this all over.
I know, bro. I was just thinking the same thing. I thought that we just said this. And also, we are part of Amp Pyra Media. You can catch us on Amp Pyra Media at amppyramedia.com. But yeah, Will T, you're right. It's like we did this all over. We did this before. And I feel very redundant because I feel like this happened already. But Will T, what did you think of the Olympics? Did it seem the same to you?
It didn't. You know, as much as we pay to see these incredible athletes, you know, and pay attention to them, we also want to feel the excitement of the fans in the arena. Well, I don't think the Olympics were quite the same without having the fans, there, because the fans bring a sense of excitement, and I think, in my opinion, it helps to further bring out that competitiveness in the athletes that are, you know, competing for the pride of their country.
Facts.
I feel like I said that before.
I think so. I think you did too, bro.
Yeah.
Who knows, man? It must be some, you know, some maybe another universe. I don't know. I don't know. Like a multiverse.
The multiverse.
Yeah, there you go.
Multiverse.
All right. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kahn Report, hosted by ESPN Washington football team insider John Kahn, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene.
This show can also be found on Podcast DC, the new local app with hundreds of options and local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Empire shows as well as other great content. And don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll recap the Washington football team's first preseason game against the New England Patriots and their upcoming preseason game against the Cincinnati Bengals. At 8:30, 48 Minutes Wizards reporter/editor Chris Krause will join us to talk about the Washington Wizards summer league play. And at 8:45, we'll talk about Earl Spence Jr. withdrawing from the Pacquiao fight due to an injury. But first, in their first preseason game, the Washington football team fell to the New England Patriots 22-13. What were your thoughts on the team's performance?
Well, hey, we talk about deja vu. Me and you have already kind of discussed this, which is dope because now we got a whole new audience and get to share our point of view. And I'm going to just start. I'm going to be very quick. I didn't like the short yardage. The short yardage offense, if that makes sense, if I'm saying that correctly, I feel like that first third and one, Peyton Barber, you stop. I think coming off of last season where that was also a challenge for you, I felt as though they should have picked that up. Their next drive, same thing, third and two, they did not convert. Now, I know I think Humphrey slipped,
yeah, he slipped
on like an out route,
but
still, I'm wanting to see improvement this season, and I didn't see it in spite of all the positives because, of course, the offensive line blocked well. Ryan Fitzpatrick got the ball out quickly. The defense started out strong. Deron Payne should have scooped up that fumble, or he should just fell on it. That could have gave you a red zone opportunity, which would have, again, gave the organization a chance to look at their red zone offense. It's also an area of struggle. What'd you say?
Yeah, I think they ruled that an incomplete pass, though, right? Because the arm was going forward. I think they ruled it
an incomplete. It was an incomplete pass.
Yeah, they ruled it. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a fumble.
It was supposed to. They ruled it. They ruled it an incomplete pass. But it looked like initially that's what it was. But they ruled it an incomplete
pass. It did look like a fumble.
Yeah. But you're right though. But at the end of the day, you're kind of right though. In theory, you're right. Like he should have landed. He just should have laid on the ball anyway. So, but you're right though.
Should have jumped on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to see them improve because I know there's a lot of discussion about Dustin Hopkins, and rightfully so. But I feel as though if you finish drives, which this Washington football team didn't do last season, you won't have to worry as much about your place kicker. Although we already know the extra point is not a gimme no more either. So you do have to evaluate the kicker. But my point is that's what I want to see improve. I want to see drives sustained. Third and one, third and twos. They did start out the game running the football and looked pretty good. So I'm not mad that although the average of the game wasn't what we would like it to be, 3.9 yards per carry. But again, we're talking about players shuffling in and out. The first unit overall looked good, but you got to improve on short yardage and converting third downs.
Will, did you have any thoughts on there?
I guess the thing that I learned was. You guys discussed this previously, so you guys did another show without me.
That's
the question.
It's specifically me
want to know.
I mean, it's all Bergen and Gold Everything. That's the other podcast show, the Fox show, bro. So yeah, it was already discussed without you, bro.
So y'all getting Fox money now?
No, ain't no money. Okay. You know what I'm saying? We get the notoriety. But go ahead, bro. Did you have something about the first?
No. I'm just giving you guys a hard time.
I know, bro.
But I'm just going to be honest with you. I told you, first week one of NFL preseason football isn't really my thing.
Yeah.
I watched, I think, a couple of drives.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you what I saw.
Uh-huh.
One, I think that Antonio Gibson is going to have a huge year just the way that they kind of used him out of the backfield.
Yeah.
In the passing game. Two, Chase Young, and this is just, you know, me watching a couple of drives.
Yeah.
Chase Young, I think he's gonna have one of those double digit sack years, one of those years where I think he'll push for upwards of 12 sacks if he stays healthy.
Uh-huh.
And three, one of the things I kind of, and you can't really tell, right, because it's a preseason game, but I saw a little bit more balance from Scott Turner as a play caller. The couple of drives that I saw. So those are the quick highlights that I got from watching the team's performance.
Yeah, I think you all are correct in your analysis of what you saw. For me, I was impressed with Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, as a quarterback in terms of anticipation. I thought, you know, he did a good job, and it seemed like he had a good rapport with Scary Terry. When you look at the defense, they were flying. I was impressed with the defense. To Ray's point, yeah, they didn't finish drives, and that's something they didn't do last season, something you kind of want to see, regardless of what happened, you know, somebody slipping or, you know, a running back not picking up 1 yard. That's something that we did see last season, that this team wasn't finishing drives, and that's something you want to see them improve on. But I think that it's something that could be fixed with this regime. Again, this is totally with this group of players. Because, again, these players are a little bit different from last year's players in terms of the quarterback position, the willingness to, go deep and extend plays and kind of get the big play within the quarterback position. So I do think there's a little difference. But to Ray's point, I do agree. Like, I didn't really think about it until he said it. That's a consistent thing, that theme that we saw last season, that this team did finish drives. But I thought defensively they were as advertised as what we heard, from people reporting in camp. Like, this defense is flying around. They're ready. They seem hungry. We saw a lot of Chase. Chase looks ready. He looks ready to play. Want to see what Montez Sweat and Chase have to do together when they're on the football field together. But again, it's just preseason. There's nothing to really kind of get overly hyped about. To me, that the game is the game to be hyped about, or to kind of like get a gauge of where you think this team is going to be at. Will probably be the second preseason game. But if you're looking for positives, and we can talk about positives, I think that one, the defense looked as advertised, the first unit, and even in terms of, and Ray mentioned the offensive line, you know, the rookie Cosme from Texas, initially a lot of folks said he was struggling in camp, but towards the end, going towards the first preseason game, they said he started to improve his play, and he looked good in the game against the New England Patriots.
Okay, let me ask you guys this. Who stood out last week during week one of the preseason game?
I liked the kid from here, the running back from D.C., Jared Patterson, undrafted rookie out of Buffalo. I thought he played well, 10 carries for 40 yards. I know people aren't going to like it. I don't care. But if you're talking about natural running as a running back, I think he's the best running back, turnabout runner, that the Washington football team have on this roster from what I saw. Like, he sees the hole. He's got playmaking ability in terms of making people miss. He's shifty. He just has that feel of a running back. Like, he's a running back. He's played this position for years, growing up and whatnot. So he just fits the. He looks like a dude that's, forget the draft pick status, or you know where you coming from, or the money amount, or whatever. But in terms of just running the football, he looks like the best running back on the squad.
I am going to surprise you with this one. And just by the way, everything that I say about his first preseason performance, I'm primarily focusing in on the first unit.
Yeah.
Because these are the guys that, of course, are going to be on the field for week one. And this is what I'm looking at. This week is going to be dope for that. But going back to my point, who stood out to me? Surprisingly, John Bostic. Uh-huh. I think Jamin Davis is motivating this dude, man. With those two guys on the field together and Holcomb, they look like they have decent speed at linebacker.
Yeah.
They look as though they could cover. And it looked as though they could play very well in the run game. So where I'm like, all right, this is the first time I can think of a linebacking core for Washington that had that sideline to sideline speed. The way they closed, I loved it. And John Bostic tackles. He wraps up. Now, he's got to watch the penalties this upcoming season, but that's a whole other discussion. This past game, Jamin Davis on the field, I felt as though he looked like a mentor, and I think he looked like a good complementary piece to – hopefully a rising star on defense in Jamin Davis.
Man, you like Boston? You like Bostic? Okay. I thought he was horrible.
For this week?
I thought he was horrible, bro. I did not. Ooh, he missed a couple. Well, I'm going to say horrible. Horrible is rough.
Horrible is rough.
Oh, man.
I mean, in terms of what?
He missed the tackle, missed one in coverage. It was a couple plays. I got to go back to my tweets because I was tweeting during the game. But he had a couple plays in that first drive, the second drive with Cam, where he had a couple plays where I was like, ugh. But I mean, he's serviceable. I mean, he's a short tackler. I get what you're talking about, Ray. But there was a couple plays that stood out to me.
And he's got speed.
Yeah, more. Yeah.
I'm not expecting him to come out and not make mistakes in the first preseason.
Of course,
game.
Bro. Of course.
And I do believe, though, that this preseason is more important than many others, because last season you didn't have this luxury. You didn't have the luxury of training camps and mini camps, so you got to use all these reps to prepare for. And he looks as though he could be good again, along with Jamin Davis. I think a guy pushing you in competition is going to help him.
Oh,
that's my thought.
Definitely.
And maybe Joe Theismann got to me. If I'm being real,
he probably did, bro. Because I wish he was on. I hope he was on Twitter, bro. Because folks was blasting Bostic. They were like, "What the."
Well, that's because that's preconceived notions, though. A lot of you guys are
facts.
You don't like
that's him. True. That's true.
His play from the past, so you're not gonna give him a clean slate. You're like Hopkins. Hopkins is done in so many people's minds because they were sick of him from last season. You know, if you look at certain people like Vic, he's got a clean slate. It don't even matter what he did in Miami and Tampa and everywhere else he played, because he's now new. But the people who've been playing and nobody necessarily has been big fans of, like Bostic, you're not going to give him any love unless he comes out and just plays flat out lights out, which he didn't do. I'm just saying I was impressed with him. That's different from everybody else, too. I like to be different, but
you are
Theismann got to me. I ain't going to lie.
I know.
Joe Theismann got to me. He's a homer, and so am I now.
Oh, man. I ain't messing with you, bro. I am not messing with you. Hey, will anybody stood out to you from what you saw? Would it be just Chase?
It would just be Chase.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
Like I said, I watched, I think three series at that.
Now, I'm with you.
You know.
Now, he stood out. Chase stood out to everybody. Like, it was what it was. That
but,
He looked ready, though. Go ahead, Will.
Let me ask you this. Because of the change in kind of, you know, going from four games to three for preseason, so is it rational for me to think that this week two will be kind of the dress rehearsal for all NFL teams, and this should be the game, you know, the week that I tune in to, and get excited about preseason football?
I think it got to be this week. It's got to be because you're gonna rest your players your last game of the season. I mean, last preseason game the fear of injury. So this got to be the game. So you're probably gonna see him play a whole half. Some situations because of quarterback competitions, you'll probably see him play a little bit more. But I think if you're gonna watch football during the preseason because you want to see the first unit a little bit longer, then I think this is the week to watch it.
Okay, well, I guess I'll get excited and tune in this week.
Yeah, man, you see some tough rookies, man.
Shout out to Candy last week. I guess she pointed out Cosby was the guy she was looking at.
Yeah, she was
playing well, along with the rest of the offensive line. Shots. And he was blowing Twitter up, Sam Cosby, rookie.
Yep.
Looks like he's going to be strong and solid. Hopefully he can stay healthy. So just want to give her a shout out. Uh-huh. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team, part of Empire Media, empiremedia.com. So, guys, we've already discussed the first preseason game. And from what we've seen, was there anything that Washington fans, not us, maybe Wole, but Washington fans, should they be concerned with about this team moving forward as we prepare for the regular season?
Man, Ray, I was going to think something else, but now since you brought this up, I think you're right. Like, not finishing drives, bro. I was thinking about something else. I was going to say the kicker, like, for real. I was going to say Hopkins obviously being an issue, but that's easy. I think your point is right. Like, it's time to finish drives. I know it's preseason, but you've shown in that game against the Patriots that your offense was able to move the football, and then you just couldn't finish. So and you put it in the hands of Hopkins to miss a kick, right? So how about finishing the drive? I think you're right. That's a good point, man. I think it was a very good point.
You're concerned about that?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it. I think that's a concern. That's a fair concern. I think it's fair. I'm concerned about that. You win football games by finishing drives, not getting 3 points, by getting seven or eight or whatever folks are getting nowadays.
And to piggyback off of that, Wole, in order to finish drives, you got to, in short yardage, you got to be able to pick up first downs.
Uh-huh,
so that's one of the areas that, you know, if those scenarios pop up during week two of the preseason, that's something I'll be tuning into and really focusing on. That's it.
See, right? You just helped us out, right?
Cycle, right? Yeah.
See, right?
Oh, well, you say Washington fans. Listen,
you help me out, bro.
I get mixed signals from the fans. You know, obviously, I'm following on social media. I'm watching the media, and there seems to be overall a buzz about the team, except for the kicker.
Yeah.
Everybody is not.
They're not feeling it, bro. They're not feeling
it. Justin Hopkins. That's the biggest concern. I'm just going to say, from a fan perspective. Now, you know, me personally watching the team, I've already shared my Wole, you seconded that sentiment. And that's cool. However, Scott Turner is always going to be my concern until
always,
I see any different. And I'm going to keep on preaching that.
Always, I ain't trying to say his name.
Every show that I'm on.
Look, I'm not saying his name. That many times. Like Candyman, I don't want to say his name like but once. That's it. I'm not saying his name. He's the man known as the offensive coordinator. So I'm not saying his name. He's not getting that from me.
Man, you don't even respect him enough to say his whole name?
Yeah, man, it's like Candyman, bro. You know what I'm saying? I want him popping up. You know what I'm saying? So he's like the boogeyman to me, bro, because he's a problem. He's a serious problem.
I mean, for now, but, you know, who know? I mean, look, Wole, it was his first year on the job as an offensive coordinator. Probably a lot of elements of the job he was figuring out.
Yeah, that's nice.
You're
a nice guy.
Coming in the year two, you know, maybe things turn around.
Maybe
it's a whole different scenario.
But you do know, like, within offensive coordinators, you know, you kind of can get a vibe when you got that guy. You get a vibe, like something. Like, you get a vibe when that guy, they're creative, something about him. Even if they're year one, you kind of get that vibe. They know what they're doing. You're not questioning certain things. You get it. I can't say that you can just get it with Scott Turner. So, we can treat him. I put it like this. The ceiling for Scott Turner to me, we're looking at, say, a prospect. The ceiling is he could be okay. He could be good. maybe. We're not going to say he's going to be one of the best play callers in the NFL. I don't think he's that good.
I mean, he has the lineage. Maybe went back to the lab, talked to his father, got some advice, went back and reviewed some game film, looked at trends on offense in the NFL, and he's coming back and back and better than ever.
Maybe, Will T. I love your positive vibes, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to go with that, man. Maybe. I'm going to be positive. Maybe. Who knows? Look at us, man. Look at us being positive. Look at us. Don't give me dead air, Will, because you always say dead air. Don't give me dead air.
Oh, man. All right. My bad, bro. The team released running back Lamar Miller and wide receiver Kelvin Harmon. Were you surprised by those releases?
No, I think we all saw these coming. You know, shout out to the guy from another show who was texting me like it was something new. Like he was breaking it, like he was South Carolina. You know what I'm talking about? He acted like he was breaking it. He was like 4 hours late, but I was like, it's all good. So no, it wasn't a surprise. And as a matter of fact, that was the whole purpose of our little text chain, was that we expected that Harmon was going to be released. Harmon is healthy now. I think he'll get another shot with another organization. Mm-hmm. Although if he doesn't, I think Washington brings him back.
Yeah, I can see that.
Where y'all got other sports text chain?
Come on, Will. This dude, yo.
Y'all do me greasy, bro.
Hey, again, all burgundy and gold.
We'll see y'all respond for days anyway.
Hey, yo, I ain't messing with Will T, bro. I ain't messing with Will T, bro. He got the juice out. I wasn't surprised at either. Harmon was a guy that, you know, saying he's coming off the injury. But I agree with Ray. If he's gonna be available, I can see him coming back to this team. Lamar Miller was just a body. Everybody pretty much knew that. Somebody was kind of, like Ray said, somebody was like boosted by him calling. I thought everybody called it, but it is what it is. So let's go to Friday. Washington takes on the Cincinnati Bengals in a dress rehearsal game. Will T, the dress rehearsal game. Bengals QB Joe Burrow is not playing. First off, I'm just going to fast forward it. Which players need to step up Friday? Ray, which players need to step up Friday?
Okay, so I'm now on Twitter. Uh-huh. Shout out to my homie Big Doug. Uh-huh. He's saying Bostic may not even be on this roster. I asked him a question. I said, am I insane for thinking he played halfway decent as part of, like, you know, a faster linebacker moving forward? And I guess I'm in the minority, the vast minority, like the 1% on this one. So with that being said, I guess Bostic is playing this coming week.
Oh, thank you, desperate. But go ahead, bro.
Again, I think Peyton Barber might be playing for a spot. Yeah. I'm serious when I say that. So Peyton Barber, if you're put in on a short yarder situation, I think he's going to have to get it done. Regardless of what your blocking scheme is, I think you're going to have to break some tackles. And you're going to have to show that fight that it got you to this point in your career. Peyton Barber, pretty good player overall if you look back at the entirety of his career. But I think Peyton Barber, definitely he's playing for a spot. And I'm going to go with John Bostic now, even though I felt like it was
a good option,
playing with Jameis. But you think he's a lock?
He a lock. I don't think he getting cut.
you said he's a short tackle. I agree with that. But I guess pass coverage is where you're most concerned about him.
Yeah.
So. We'll go from there because he's going to see more reps. He's going to be on the field longer.
Yeah.
And the linebacking core was a weakness of this team last season. Again, I'm looking to see improvement in the areas from last year. I mentioned short yardage offense, and now I'm mentioning linebackers. John Bostic in particular, man. I like you. Hopefully you step up, my brother.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Hopkins needs to step up. Definitely. I mean, I'm a fan of the kid, but, you know, Antonio Gandy Golden needs to step up. These are the individuals that need to, you know, play at a high level. And hopefully they get the opportunity. Well, AGG hopefully gets the opportunity because he will be playing with, looks like Kyle Allen will be playing. So they'll have three quarterbacks who can throw the football. So Steven Montez probably will get limited, you know, attempts. So, hopefully like these individuals need to step up. So, Steven Sims Jr., all these individuals are competing for a spot. So they got to play at a high level. My man on Twitter said, she said Dustin Hopkins, AGG, and Antonio Gandy Golden. He said Daryl Roberts and the whole damn linebacking core.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Folks are like Hopkins.
That's what's up, though. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like the fact that people are reacting that way, even though, again, it was just one game, a few series, but you're trying to see improvement from last season. I love it.
Yeah, so, but yeah, it is what it is. It's like, yeah, we got to see. They got to improve, man. It is what it is. They got players that need to kind of step it up, and hopefully they get it done. Hey, Ray, can you take us to break, man? Because I think our guest is about to show up.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. 48 minutes. Chris Krause will update us on the Wizards Summer League play. Wow, what is that update on after the break? Wizards Summer League talk. This is going to be interesting. You listen to Urban Sports Day.
On Empire Media. You know it. Oh, my bad, bro. Sorry. You dig? I'm saying you dig, Will. Mm-hmm. There you go, my man. Appreciate you. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, part of Empire Media. Well, right now we have 48 minutes, Washington Wizards reporter / editor Chris Krause on the line. What's up, Chris, and welcome to the Urban Sports Scene.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? Thanks for having me.
Chris, what's up, man? How you doing?
What's going on, Chris?
Not too bad.
Well, glad to have you on, Chris. Before we get started, can you tell our listeners about 48 minutes and your role with 48 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. So, 48 minutes, we're a full-stop basketball site. We have a larger presence in several markets. The Washington area is one of them, and myself and my team, we do a pretty good job of trying to cover everything going on with the Wizards.
That's dope, man. That's dope. So, let's get right into it, Will T.
Yeah, Chris, the Wizards were 1-3. They ended the NBA Summer League with a 1-3 record. How was the play of rookie Corey Kispert? How did he look?
I think it was a little bit uneven, but that was to be expected. It's been a weird year. Like, you don't have your normal, allotment of games, and then, how you prepare for the draft was a little bit different. So, I was expecting kind of, uneven performances from a lot of players, just a little bit of a, more erratic. But I think he came into his own, especially in the Bucks game. What do you guys think? Were you guys impressed at all with the scoring,
yes,
or are you guys more worried about defense?
When I looked at him, I mean, because I like them in Gonzaga. I actually like the draft pick. A lot of people don't, but I actually like the draft pick. I like his game. I just thought that he was a little bit too tentative for me. I thought, to me, when I saw the guy that I saw in Gonzaga, he just didn't think as much. He just played basketball. In the summer league, it was like he was trying to show a lot more. Just didn't try to play. He didn't play to me in his own game. And then sometimes when he was hot, like the game before today's game, he was, you know, shooting. He was hot. And he wasn't shooting enough, in my opinion. So I just think he's trying to find an even flow in the NBA. He's trying to find himself in the NBA right now.
Well,
yeah,
I think
that sound, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Will?
No, I was going to say, with regards to the pick, I wasn't necessarily a fan of the pick. I think there were guys who were drafted directly after him, you know, probably the next 4 out of 5 picks who I think would have been a better fit for this team and this team's timeline. I think Corey Kispert is more of a guy who's a specialist on this level. And, you know, if you put him on a team that's, you know, on the cusp of making it to that next level, I think he'll definitely find spots to excel. But when you're drafting a guy like Corey Kispert, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 13th overall, there is some type of expectation for him to come in and produce at a higher level relatively quickly. Even though, you know, there was a wholesale change over this roster, I still think there are certain areas that just drafting a specialist like Corey Kispert doesn't help you in the interim or in the long term on the team's on a timeline to this, you know, they're willing to compete. And by compete, I mean make it to the second round of the Eastern Conference playoff. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Chris, do you believe that Kispert is more than just a shooter, though? Like, I think he's a phenomenal athlete.
Me too.
And I think a shooter is like Garrison Matthews, you know, who is not the best athlete, but he can knock down some open shots within the floor of the offense. But I think Kispert can get on the open floor. I think he'll dunk. He'll rebound. Mm-hmm. What do you think he brings to the table besides just shooting? I think labeling him just a shooter or specialist is not necessarily fair when he's an exceptional athlete and all-around player. What do you think?
I'm with you there. I think it'll take a little time, as it normally does for, you know, a lot of players to kind of come in and take a role, a meaningful role on what we should have as a good team, a team that's a legit playoff contender and hopefully not a, you know, not an eighth seed. Hopefully we don't have to deal with any sort of playing concerns or like anywhere near that. But I think when you're picking that far down the first and you got a guy like Bradley Beal and you have, you know, a plan for the off season, you can go one of two ways. You can go get a guy who is, hey, we know what he's going to give us. And I think the Wizards had Chris Duarte also high on their draft board.
I like him.
And he's a guy I think probably should have won the top 10 just based on, you know, you're getting like a future starter, probably maybe like in the Danny Green mold, but you know, ceiling's capped a little bit. And I think the ceiling's capped a little bit on Kispert, but we're going to see that maybe that trajectory of, okay, he can be our fifth starter. He can be the guy, you know, towards the end of this rookie deal, really making a real big impact as a guy with hopefully Brad there and whoever else he recruits. Cause you know, he's already started that process with, you know, Spencer and, you know, you can even say Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as well.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Team, part of Empire Media, empiremedia.com. And, Chris, we were just talking about off the air how this is one of the most competitive summer leagues that we've seen in years. That's just our opinion. I don't know how you feel about that. And I feel like the Wizards were not really mentioned in that discussion. They did not play well, considering all the guys that stepped up. The young talent that's coming into this league just looks awesome. And then also Kyrie Walker didn't really get a chance to play, obviously, because of COVID. I think that hurt. Like, if you saw him in the past, he competed very high in high school against guys like Jalen Green. So overall, what was your feelings on the Wizards and how they fit into what's turned out to be, in our opinion, a great summer league?
Yeah, I think they get a little bit of a pass just with the 3 players getting COVID and then having to bring in new players. And it's like, it seems like, oh, the Wizards again have some sort of like, you know, beginning of the season troubles. And, you know, they're really hoping next year they can just get out to a clean start and not have any sort of, any sort of issues. But yeah, I mean that's not, you know, that's neither here nor there when it comes to playing on the court. I mean, you just got to kind of get out there and compete and go to high level, even if it's not with the players you thought were going to be there. Mm-hmm. But I think you can see pieces. I don't think the winning and losing in the summer league is the biggest thing. I mean, only two teams can play in the championship. There is no playoffs, and mm-hmm. like you know, for the Wizards, it's like, what did you want to go 3-1 and get one more? You know, like what does that really do for you? If you feel like you're getting everything around, and but yeah, I mean, like, yeah, we would have took a summer league champion, and we would have took a summer league MVP. You know, the Wizards are one of, I believe it's five franchises that have two of them, with John Wall and Glenn Rice Jr. So I mean, yeah, hey, well, you know, kind of take all the awards you can, but
so
the
Chris,
Kings made the championship, Chris, the Kings, the Sacramento Kings. That's crazy.
So hey, Chris,
the banner makers in Sacramento are going to get paid.
So, hey, I love the sarcasm, baby.
Hey, Chris. Ray mentioned, we all had a discussion about summer league and how it's been so competitive. So who's been your favorite summer league player? It doesn't have to be with the Wizards, period, that you've enjoyed watching.
Yeah, I'll go non-Wizards. I'll go Paul Reed out of Philly. I've also been covering some of their games, you know, catching the post games, you know, like talking with them on the Zoom. And Paul Reed is going to be something now. He's still raw. Like, he still has a lot of things like footwork and, like, you know, just like different stuff. He's probably not big enough to play the five long term, but I think he can play, you know, a backup five. But he's been fantastic, bringing energy and just doing something which is, I think it's a little bit harder for centers to thrive in summer league, which is part of the reason I'm not too worried about Evan Mobley.
Good point.
But
yeah,
just the game is like, you know, like there's a lot of smaller guys out there, and you know, like people are just spreading them out, and like for example, the Wizards are like letting Isaiah Todd just, you know, like have as many threes as he wants just to see how that feels and stuff.
Yeah.
And it can be hard defending in space and everything. So, but I think Paul Reed has just done a phenomenal job, even with those caveats.
I would be ignorant if I didn't ask you, since you do cover the Sixers, Embiid's contract. What are your thoughts on Embiid getting a 4-year major max deal?
I think it's good for him. I mean, I think at this point, like, you're like in his first contract, there was a lot of injury offset language, like, you know, if he misses certain games, they could void X number of years and X number of dollars. There isn't that there, so that shows the team has confidence in Joel. And I think with having now 6 years left on, instead of having 2 years left, there is no more talk of Joel going to the Knicks. You know, like, and I don't know that played a big role, but yeah, he's Philadelphia's anchor, and you know, any talk of you know, what if the Knicks get Damian Lillard and then they can recruit, and yeah, okay, all right, well, we're gonna be in Philadelphia.
Chris, I'm hearing Damian Lillard has some interest in Philly, and there's some Ben Simmons talk around, you know, Portland. Any steam, I guess, moving ahead with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could happen. I think everybody wants everything now in life today, and they wanted it yesterday, and so they're not going to wait for tomorrow. Philly's just got to wait. You know, it's Lillard and it's Beal, and we know Beal's not going anywhere. So it's then who is the next star to come out and say, hey, I want to trade, and then Daryl is right there ready with Ben Simmons as really like one of the top prospects that's going to be on the market if you are going to rebuild from a star. But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen now. And I think Ben could be there. Like I'm hearing different things, but I think he's going to be there through the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. maybe even closer to the trade deadline than anyone wants to admit.
So if Ben gets a jumper, they'll probably keep him, right? Or what?
I think he's going to try. I think that's a, you know, he has shot well in pregame. So I think there is something there. But that's, you know, hey, we don't you know, I can talk about how I shoot well in the courts of Northern Virginia or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just like, it's not on an NBA court.
I know that's
yeah,
right.
Wole smacking boards and layup lines.
Hey.
But you get to the game and his knees freeze up. So yeah,
I hate you.
The warm-ups don't mean a whole lot. Bro.
I hate you, Ryan.
But in all seriousness, Chris, Ben Simmons, he has a good-looking form. Like, his shot looks good.
Oh,
it's just a mental thing, really. That's how.
I think that's part of it. And I think with Ben, if he can get to the hoop so easily that he just kind of shifts in the gear and just does that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take some sort of it's going to take some coaching. Sam Cassell, you know, if he's back there and everything, it's going to be a project. And you know, I think that there's hope that it will progress. And he's definitely got the skill set to do it. I'm 100% with you there.
Definitely, Chris, man. Thanks for being on. This has been dope. How can our listeners catch you on social media, and how can they take a look at your content?
Yeah, sure. So you can check out 48minutes.com. I mean, we have so much content on the Wizards. We cover the Sixers as well in depth. And you can catch me on Twitter at NBAcrouse. That's NBACrouse.
Well, man, thanks, Chris. We appreciate you being on. You have a good one. Hopefully, we'll have you on again during the actual NBA season.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Thank you so much.
Hey, cool stuff. Appreciate you, Chris. All right, fellas. After the break, we'll discuss Manny Pacquiao. He was supposed to fight Spence. The fight won't happen August 21st due to an injury. We'll discuss this after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Doses on Empire Media.
On Empire Media. AmpireMedia.com.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. More so than before, but tonight, don't call it a comeback.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy, and myself, Wole, part of Empire Media, AmpireMedia.com. Ray Jeezy?
I thought it was on you, my dude, my bad. Errol Spence Jr. Of course, he was forced to withdraw from his planned WBC and IBF welterweight title defense against Manny Pacquiao due to an eye injury. So now, this coming Saturday, Pacquiao will fight WBA welterweight champion Udonis Ugas. What were you thinking when you first heard the news? Will, I know you're going first, but I was mad.
I was disappointed, right? Because, you know, I was, you know, as I said many times on this podcast, you know, boxing has missed out on great opportunities to have those events this summer. Right. By those events, I mean fights that pop, that kind of transition over into the realm of pop culture and get the masses to pay attention to it. Right. That hasn't happened, and it won't happen with Pacquiao versus Ugas. But understanding that, you know, Errol Spence Jr., he had a detached retinal. My emotion shift from being disappointed to a concern, right? That's one of those injuries that we've seen have led to boxers retiring, right? And, you know, it's one of those injuries that, you know, if hit hard enough, a boxer can sustain permanent damage to their sight. So, you know, I was disappointed at first, but you know, my emotions are more on the side of, you know, get better, Errol Spence, and, you know, take as much time you need to recover from the surgery, and hopefully you're able to make it back and, you know, have a the same level of productivity in the ring as you had previously.
Was this from the accident? I'm trying to. Where did this
no,
come?
I'm not sure. From my understanding is he had one of his, I believe, 30-day check-in medical examinations by Las Vegas Boxing Commission, and there was a determination that he had a detached retina. He's boxed after the accident. We know that. So I don't know if it's something that happened, you know, if the accident happened and then he sustained further damage bouts after the fight, or was it something that he just got hit with a punch during training camp? So, you know, a lot of detail wasn't given.
Ray, what you about to say, Ray? You about to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, of course I was disappointed, not in the fact that, you know, Errol Spence was pulling out. You got to do what you got to do, and the detached retina is no joke.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with everything Will just said, but it was another blow for boxing. Yeah. We already had Fury and Wilder be postponed. We had Teofimo Lopez and Cambosis fight postponed. Boxing cannot afford these types of incidents because the fan base is already, in my opinion, is starting to decrease. Many are focused on UFC, and to have this was just bad timing, and it's unfortunate, but it's a real issue. Ugas is a good opponent. I still think the pay-per-view vibes will be halfway decent, but it won't be what it was, you know, in terms of Errol Spence numbers. So that's going to suck. I wouldn't be shocked if it does not hit 500,000 pay-per-view vibes. I think Errol Spence, Manny Pacquiao was guaranteed to at least get to that number. So now it's a loss. It's a loss for a guy like Al Haymon. And for Al Haymon, he has to land this Caleb Plant Canelo fight moving forward. He has to.
Well, a couple things. One, they made an announcement that the Caleb Plant and Canelo fight, that's been signed, and it's going to be in November of this year.
For real?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
God. Two, 500,000. I think they'll be lucky if they make 150,000 pay-per-view for this fight. I just don't, you know, even though we all know that Manny Pacquiao was legendary, he's one of the great, you know, eight division champions, one of the greatest fighters of this era, and, you know, and
it's a draw
in all of boxing, in the history of boxing. A major draw, done great in pay-per-view fights.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't, you know, I just don't see the anticipation of, you know, people get excited to fight for him to come back after a year, a year plus out of the ring to fight. Your Dinas Uga. You know, even though Uga is a Cuban fighter, we all know of that
skilled,
you know, fighters from Cuba who historically have been great, phenomenal fighter.
Uh-huh.
I just don't, you know, Ugas doesn't have the hype around him, or he doesn't have the story around him. And, you know, I don't necessarily think it's going to, you know, they'll be lucky to do 150K pay-per-view buy.
It's going to be tough because you're basically banking on just the Manny Pacquiao train, right? Because you didn't get any time to build a story. You can't build a story in like a couple of weeks. He's basically the fill-in. So it's going to be hard to. I mean, basically, it's all going to be predicated on Manny Pacquiao. No knock on Ugas, but it's going to be predicated on what Manny Pacquiao is going to bring to the table. You know what I'm saying? So
not just Manny. It's not just Manny Pacquiao. It's a Manny Pacquiao that hasn't fought.
Yeah,
in years.
Agreed. I agree. Right. And you're not even getting that. Yeah, I'm with you. Like, you're not even getting the normal Manny Pacquiao momentum train, right, Will? Like, you know, coming off of. No, go ahead.
My bad. Don't mean to cut you off.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be something different if Manny Pacquiao fought in March of this year, or February or January of this year. He looked phenomenal during that fight, right?
Yeah.
At least you get that build up where, you know, he's coming off of a fight within 2021 and he looked phenomenal, and you want to see him, and, you know, and you anticipate to see him have fighting Spence, and, you know, you can get away with that disappointment of him not fighting Spence because, mm-hmm. you know, he looked phenomenal earlier this year. But this is a guy who hasn't fought in a year plus. Mm-hmm. You don't know what type of Manny Pacquiao you get.
Yeah. And you're not going to get the people ain't excited for Ugas. I mean, it is what it is. They're not going to be excited for him. It's going to be like, all right. And I'm talking about like the non-boxing fan. Because that's what helps, you know, cultivate this money spending environment to increase pay-per-view buys and whatnot. So it's tough, bro. It is. It's tough. It is. And I feel bad for Earl because this could have been such a money. This is going to put him on a different tax bracket. You know what I'm saying? Like this fight.
Not only that, put him on a different tax bracket. It would have put him from a name recognition.
Yeah.
Right? Within, you know, people who are not necessarily fans of the sport.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're people who have an emotional attachment to Manny Pacquiao fights from the 2000 and 2010. So you could have tapped into some of that fan base, picked up some of those fans.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, without him, you know, not having. With that injury, you know, him missing out on an opportunity to fight Manny Pacquiao, you know, I think it's kind of a slight blow to him building up that level of popularity and becoming, you know, a household name.
So
I got a quick question.
Go Ray.
Good job. Just real quick, what do y'all think the pay-per-view numbers would have been if Earl was able to?
It would have been insane. It would have been insane, bro. It would have been insane.
150,000.
I think that. No, I think they would have done 500,000.
I think
that's what I thought. 500,000.
I think easily would have been 500,000. Easily though, easily. Mm-hmm. You know.
Okay.
You had people traveling to Vegas for this fight. Like my brother was traveling for that fight. Like you got folks ready for that fight, bro. Like it would have easily done well, and it's in Vegas. It would have easily done well. Probably would have been the biggest fight in terms of pay-per-view buy we've seen in a while. Like. Because you're getting, like Will said, you're getting one, it's Earl Spence. It's a guy that's kind of on the cusp of being known in terms of, like, the non-boxing fan. And, you know, some of the non-boxing fans know him, but he's on the cusp of being a household name. And then you're fighting Manny Pacquiao, a household name who people just buy pay-per-view just to buy pay-per-view. So you're going, like Will said, you're going to get his fans seeing this up-and-coming, this budding star. It would have been crazy, bro. It would have been crazy. So, like, it's an opportunity, like, and like what Will mentioned, like, this summer we've missed out on so many major fights. And you too, Ray, you mentioned it too, on so many major fights that could have really, like, changed the landscape and the momentum of boxing. And now everything has been canceled or been pushed back.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, these last three months of the year, we'll get some extremely competitive and explosive boxing matches.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Barring any more delays or cancellations.
Yeah.
Will, mm-hmm. real quick, Shakur Stevenson tweeted out yesterday. He said he will fight Gary Russell Jr. He said Gary Russell just be talking. What do you think about a possible matchup at 130 between those two?
That's the ultimate, I mean, in boxing, you know, I know that Gary Russell Jr. will probably take offense to this, but that would be the ultimate, like, gatekeeper fight for Shakur Stevenson, right? Because you have a guy, Gary Russell Jr., who's an established champ, a little bit older, versus the next perceived up-and-coming star in boxing, is Shakur Stevenson. You know, I think Shakur Stevenson is going to have a hell of a time, not a hell of a time, but he's definitely facing his greatest step up in competition with Herring. I believe that fight's been signed for October. But I think, I think that would be an excellent fight for both, you know, if we were to see a Gary Russell Jr. versus Shakur Stevenson fight, I think that would be an amazing fight. You know, Shakur Stevenson's defensive ability, Gary Russell Jr.'s hand speed and his quickness and flexibility and footwork in the ring versus, you know, Shakur Stevenson's defense. And both guys are, especially Gary Russell Jr., he's definitely known to let his hands go. A great fight. I probably give the slight edge to Gary Russell Jr. just because I think the later that fight would go on into the was deemed the championship round. Uh-huh. Gary Russell Jr. would have the ring generalship and ring acumen to outpoint Shakur Stevenson. Uh-huh. That's just my personal opinion.
So real quick before we end the show off, do you think, we're going back to Pac-Man, do you think that this would be Pac-Man's last fight? And if not, who would he fight next?
No, absolutely not. Okay. I don't think this is his last fight. Just because, simply, you know, if he wins, I don't think this is his last fight because of the level of competition. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If Manny Pacquiao, he's one of those guys, to me, if he's going to go out, he's going to go out getting a big payday. And it's going to be against a big-name opponent. And unless you guys comes in and totally shocks the world and beats Manny Pacquiao, I don't think this is his last fight. I think you could potentially see him say, hey, give me Bud Crawford, depending on, you know, how Manny Pacquiao feels and looks in the ring on Saturday.
Sounds good. Sounds good. All right. Time to wrap the show up. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media, at AmpireMedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Empire Media shows as well as other great content. Hey, thank you all for listening to the show. You know, we appreciate you. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The Ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.